Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. So today I'm going to be reviewing a book by Christopher Priest called The Inverted World. And this is quite a strange one because when I was reading it, I presumed, I don't know why, but I thought this was a book from like the last 10 years or maybe from the 1990s. And as I was reading it, I was thinking, well, this is good. I mean, there's some good ideas in this, but you know, I've seen this done, you know, much better before, you know, some different ideas. And I thought, well, I've seen this idea before and I've seen this idea before. What's the big deal? You know, why is everyone talking about it? And it's only when I actually finished the book and that looked it up on goodreads.com. And it says here, first published in 1974. So this is actually a much older book than I thought as I was reading it, or as I was listening to it as an audiobook. So that kind of made a lot of things kind of a bit clearer in my head. All these things which I thought, oh, this is good, but I've seen it done here, and I've seen that idea here, and I've seen that. And now I realize that this book is obviously very influential on some authors who I enjoy. Like, I think it's quite very influential on Alistair Reynolds and some of his stories, which I'll touch on later on as well, and Ian M. Banks too. For different reasons, which I'll get to in this review. So the reason I read this book is I read The Prestige, and I really enjoyed The Prestige so much that I gave it 5 stars. And people said, "Hey, if you like The Prestige, you should check out The Inverted World by Christopher Priest, the same author." And they said, "Well, be careful because it's the ending isn't that good, and it's a bit slow at the start." So I knew kind of what I was getting into. The basic setup for the story. Actually, I don't want to go. I've just read the blurb again on Goodreads.com, and it's just massive spoilers. It does the blurb and tells you everything or all of the what you need to know and about what's going to happen all the way up until pretty much like the last quarter of the book. So I suggest if you're interested in this book, read it. I think it is worth reading because, like I say, it seems to be quite an influential book. And it's an interesting book, even though I'm not personally, as an enjoyment kind of thing, I can't rate it that highly. But it is worth reading. But the setup, like I say, the blurbs that you might read on the back of the book or on Goodreads are a bit spoilerific, and it's best to go into this book not knowing what's happening. So the setting, in a non-spoilerific way, is there's a city, and the city is called Earth. And someone lives in that city, and the city is moving. And that's pretty much all you need to know. It's on tracks, and they lay tracks ahead, and they pick up the tracks from behind, and lay more tracks ahead, and then pick up the tracks from behind, and keep moving forward. And it's in this post-apocalyptic world, and this dystopian society based on this city. It's about the size of a tower block. And you know, it says like a few hundred feet wide and 1,500 feet long or something like this. Big, big city. And the people who live in it are ignorant about the world that they live in. And only a few people are allowed outside, called the guildsmen. And our main character is going to become a guildsman. And yes, the wider world is very much a mystery. What the sun looks like is a mystery. And all these other things are mysteries. And this is the basic plot, or the main, I'd say a plot. It's not really a plot. But what happens throughout most of the book is that our main character discovers the mysteries of the wider world. And if you read the blurbs of the book, it kind of gives away some of these mysteries. Like, where has the city been? What's behind the city? And what is going on in the city's future? And why does it travel at this certain speed, and why is it not allowed to fall behind, and why it has to keep moving forward but not too far forward, and all the adventures of a city as it moves across a post-apocalyptic devastated landscape, and the people that it encounters along the way. Otherwise the kind of mystery itself is like a hard, I call it like a hard science fiction idea. An interesting hard science fiction idea based on, you know, the title of Inverted World plays into that, of course, or that's what it's about. But unfortunately, the setting is the story in a way. Like I say, I don't want to give anything more away because then I start spoiling the book. And normally you can just say what the setting is, but there isn't that much more to this book plot-wise or story-wise than somebody discovering the layout of the world, and what does lay behind and what does lay ahead. And without that mystery, or for me to spoil that mystery, kind of spoils most of the enjoyment or most of the discovery that happens in the book. It is a book of discovery. Unfortunately, this, for me, doesn't work as it can't really carry a whole novel, this kind of like, this character doesn't know what's going on in the world and then has to discover it. For example, this can work well. And like I say, I think this is one of this book is a big influence on, say, like Terminal World by Alistair Reynolds, where there is sort of like a big mystery of the planet that they're on and why is the planet like this and what's this big tower that goes up into space and, you know, why is it called Terminal World and, you know, why are these different levels of technology and they're going around here and there's airships can go over there but they can't do here and electricity works there. There's lots of different mysteries going on. But there's other stories which are going on within this world which are pushing it forward. But also, the main character doesn't know why the world is built like that way or why the world has become to be that way, and none of the other characters do either. So it's a story of discovery, but it feels like meaningful discovery because nobody knows what the mystery is or what the answer to the mystery is, and then they discover the answer to the mystery throughout the course of the book, and it feels like the discovery is meaningful or worth something. However, in Inverted World, it's the opposite way around. Lots and lots of people already know all of the answers to the mystery, but everybody on this city that is moving along is kept in ignorance artificially. And I can understand how this can work. It's sort of like, oh, this is a mystery. It's going to be very dangerous for people to know what the answer to this mystery is. So let's keep everyone locked up in the city. There's not going to be any windows, or windows only open at certain times when you can't see anything important outside, and the people who live inside the city don't know anything. But as I was going through, I was just thinking, well, why is it a mystery? Wouldn't it be better if everybody knew what the secret was? And that means they wouldn't have to keep everyone in ignorance, and it'd be a lot easier to do that, all of that kind of thing. And there is never a good reason for why everybody is kept in ignorance all the time. And throughout the book, more and more people discover all of the answers, and they don't have to take the journey that our main character takes to discover them. It's just revealed to them anyway. So if they hadn't have picked this main character to discover all of the mysteries of the world, there wouldn't be any mysteries of the world because, like, halfway through the book, everyone discovers them. Or if it had been set a bit beforehand, the mysteries of the world wouldn't, you know... I know, it's just one of those things that you just go, well, why didn't they just tell everybody? And it's like, oh, no, you've got to discover it for yourself, and that's the only way it's meaningful. And all the time I was thinking, why is it meaningful that you have to discover it for yourself? So that whole idea that the mystery itself is interesting, but the idea that this mystery should be kept a secret from anyone in the novel who lives on this city that is moving across these train tracks across this barren landscape, it felt very much like a contrivance, like a plot contrivance, that that came first, the mystery came first, and then it's sort of like, oh, well, it would be too difficult that if at school everyone just learned how the world works. It's like, you know, it's like the whole idea of like, oh, what if the world is, you know, like pre-Columbian times, everyone thinks the world is flat, and if you go to the edge of it, it's not. It's like, yeah, but everyone's just told that the world isn't flat. Nobody has to sail to the edge of the world to discover that they can go all the way around the world, you know, if everybody already knows that the world is not flat, it's actually round, or it's actually a sphere. That's one problem here. And, otherwise, the story and plot, there isn't really a story or a plot. It's just like there is a mystery, and when the mystery is solved and, you know, and all of the problems are solved, the story ends. And that's it. And this can work, except that the writing isn't good enough to sustain this, because we have this, our main character, and like I say, they have to discover the answers for themselves. But all the way through, I was continuously frustrated that the main character was too stupid and just didn't get it. And there was all these different signs all the way through, and maybe it's just because I've read science fiction or that I wasn't brought up in this world to be ignorant and stuff, but like all the time I was just like, I can see the twist. Well, it's not even a twist. I could see the reveal coming. And this can work well. Like if there's a big reveal and I discover it before the main character, if I work it out before it's actually stated as plain facts within the book, I feel clever. But I don't feel clever if I see it coming too early. Like, it's good that if I can see the twist or the reveal coming about a page or just a few minutes as an audiobook before it is revealed, because then that that makes me think, ah, I've seen this. And then it's revealed and I was like, yes, I knew it. And even though I knew it only a little bit before, it makes me feel clever that I worked out just with the clues and the thing. And the, that's good writing. But it's bad that if, you know, if I feel like I'm 3, 4, 5, 6 chapters ahead of the main character, because then I'm just catching up. Oh, the author and the main character is just catching up to my... To where my understanding of the world is, or my understanding of the mystery or the twist or the reveal is. And it's even worse in this book, because the character, it's like he's in this place and then it's like, oh, this is ahead, and he goes behind and he discovers, and it's sort of like, guess what's behind, guess what's behind. He goes all the way behind, guess what's behind, guess what, and he still isn't guessing it. I'm like, but it's really obvious what happens behind, guess what's behind, guess what. Oh, it's really obvious. And then he gets all the way up to the back, you know, he goes in this big loop and comes back to the city again, and it's like, oh, and that's what's happened. And he's like, oh, that's what's happened. And I'm like, yeah, but I knew that happened just like before you even set off to your trip behind the city. I knew what happened. And then it's sort of like, oh, now you're going to go on a trip in front of the city. And it's like, guess what's up here? Guess what's up here? And I was like, I know what's up ahead, because I've already discovered, I already worked it out before he set off on his trip behind. So like, I guessed what the twist was in the trip for him going ahead of the city before he set off behind, which means that I'm waiting for about 2/3 of the book. Or almost, yeah, between 1/2 and 2/3 of the book, I'm just waiting for some kind of revelation to happen, to be revealed to the main character that I've already worked out. And that is super frustrating when there's no other plot. It's just like, and what is behind the city? And what is ahead of the city? And what is behind it, the city and ahead of the city? The interest of that is dependent on, you know, the answer to this mystery of what's going on with the city, what's coming up behind the city and what's going ahead of the city. But there isn't enough of anything else there to do it. It's interesting enough stuff, and it's interesting writing, kind of, but not really at all. And I don't want to spend like 2/3 of the novel just waiting for the main character to catch up with it. It felt like I was reading like a short story. You know, often short stories is like, oh, there's this twist in the world. I'm trying to think of a short story that I reviewed, but I haven't reviewed many of these short stories. But like, there's this the first story in the Stories of Your Lives and Others by I can't remember the name of the author now. Someone, and in it's sort of like, oh, there's a Tower of Babel, and they go, or Tower of Babylon, and they go up to the top of the tower, and they reach the sky, and then they tunnel through the sky, and what happened? You know, it's a short story's worth of mystery, because I'm, you know, as someone who's reading this story, I'm just thinking, oh, it could be this, it could be that, it could be this, it could be that, and then as soon as I've guessed what it is, the story reveals it, and then the story ends, and I'm like, great, that's it. We had a fun journey, we did it, but it's a short story's worth of world building. There's a short story's worth of journey and discovery within this this book, The Inverted World. Whereas, say, like, for example, in Terminal World by Alistair Reynolds, we have that similar kind of thing. There's a mystery. Why is the world set up like this? And people go on a journey to discover that, among other things, to discover that. But along the way, there's a story. There's a, you know, there's chases or, you know, with the bad guys coming up and fighting, and there's chases and airships and all these other kind of stuff that goes on. And now that I think back to Terminal World, I don't remember the characters that well. I don't remember this other story that well. Mainly what I remember is the secret mystery and what the Terminal World is and what the tower was and, you know, and why the world is set up that way. That is actually a really interesting thing. And now I've read The Inverted World, I can see, you know, the Terminal World does owe a debt to this in a certain way, you know, like what the main mystery is and where it comes from. And it kind of makes me appreciate the Terminal World or Terminal World by Alistair Reynolds more now, because I see another one of those influences. I always get these messages, you know, even just a few days ago, someone put a message, like replied to my review on goodreads.com about Terminal World and said, oh, it's great. I didn't get all the influences and all the other Mars science fiction that Alistair Reynolds is referencing, but I enjoyed it anyway. And the Inverted World reference in Terminal World, I didn't notice at the time because I'd not read The Inverted World, but now I do see it. Again, I can appreciate it more. But even though I don't remember the Terminal World wider story, all of that wider story was going on while the main mystery was being solved. Like, there wasn't just the main mystery being solved. Rather, you know, there was other stuff going on, and that, even though I don't remember that so much, I think I'm just repeating myself now, but, you know, that's the kind of thing. I need more stuff going on. Like, if you're going to talk about politics, do it with, you know, spaceships and military drops at the start and end of the book, like I mentioned with the Starship Troopers review. You can't just have a political discussion. Political discussion plus bugs plus, you know, starship drops and space battles and stuff. That's the kind of thing we need to do. You know, that's the kind of thing that you need to do. You can't just have it as a basic idea and revelation of that idea. Certainly not when that takes up two-thirds of the novel. And then at the end of the book, people said, oh, he didn't really have a good ending, and then just finished the book. And I do agree. I think the ending is a bit of a letdown, and there's main, like, again, I don't want to get into spoiler stuff, but, like, the hard science fiction explanation of what all the mysteries in the world don't really answer all of the questions. And because it seems to be very, very subjective at the end, very kind of perception-based at the end. And I was like, but it was more than perception. It's more than, there is objective reality here. You can't just write it away. And I think the end of the book, while interesting, introduces more plot holes or more questions rather than resolving anything. And I do understand that it's not meant to have a strong resolution for the main character and all the situation. But I think I would have preferred it if the end of the book, for the start, I'd have preferred it if there had been a strong story for our main character throughout most of the book, and then at the end to have a mysterious ending rather than not a strong story plus a mysterious ending. I think if you're going to have a mysterious ending, you have to have a bit more strength, something more going on beforehand. Talking of our main character, forget what I said about hero protagonist in Snow Crash being a really, really dumb name. We have reached another level of dumb, or maybe a similar level of dumb. So I think if I'm going to call out hero protagonist, I have to call out Hellwood Man. Our main character is called Man, and his first name is Hellwood. So Hellwood Man. Man is heading towards hell. And when I first heard that, I was like, really? So what are everybody else's names? Surely everybody else must be called, like, Heavenwood Woman or something like that. But no, other people's names are, like, Victoria and Elizabeth and then Hellwood. Is Hellwood, like, an old English name that I've just missed or something? I don't know. So, I could have done with just a different name, sort of like less Hellwood, and I'm not quite sure why Christopher Priest thought that was a good idea to call his main character, because it kind of fell flat. Like, they called, hey, Hellwood. In the end, I just kind of just ignored it in a way that I could never ignore hero protagonist, but it did get to me a bit. Now, Hellwood Man is a very flat character. I was not impressed by his character at all, and it's unfortunate because we spend pretty much all of the book seeing the world through his eyes, and he's really dumb, and yet somehow, at the, you know, as it goes through and he grows older, he's like, oh, and he became well respected and was gonna be on this council and stuff. And I was like, really, this guy who couldn't even work out what was behind and what was ahead, he's that stupid, and yet he's the most respected, or he's gonna be a respected person? And I understand it's political maneuvering going on, but I just didn't really understand why I was meant to care about him. And so I read some of these reviews on goodreads.com as I was just doing some research, you know, because I wanted to see when the book was written and things like that. And I thought, well, I'll check out some of these reviews. And it's quite funny because some of the reviews are literary readers who seem, in their reviews, far more concerned that you still think highly of them, even though that they're reading science fiction. It's like, oh no, I'm stooping to read science fiction here. Normally I would be reading this author and that author, and this is very, someone very literary, you know, and but now I'm going to stoop down to this level to read science fiction. And then they say, just like all science fiction, the characters are flat and lacking. And then some other reviews that I read were from science fiction readers. And it's like, as a science fiction and fantasy fan, I don't usually find idea stories, there's something like that, I don't really find idea stories to be satisfying without, you know, without strong plot and without strong characters. I need the strong plot and characters, otherwise the idea story just doesn't really do it for me. And so it's quite funny that the literary readers are, you know, read this and they say, oh, well, you know, this is science fiction. The characters are flat. Of course they are, because it's science fiction. And then the science fiction readers are looking at the other way. It's like, oh, well, as an idea novel, I'm not sure if they think it's a literary novel, but it's very much a novel about ideas. And they wanted stronger plot and characters as well, just like I did. So I think this is a story which falls in between the literary world, who they, you know, they want more characters, and the science fiction world, which actually wants more plot and story and action and characters. And I do think that's telling, that the main character is unsatisfying from both directions. Which brings me on to one of the main things. It's like, this is a story about ideas. What is the big idea? And I understand that science fiction people will say, oh, the idea of this is that there's this world and there is this mystery and it's a hard science fictional idea that we have to get through, and it requires geometry and math and all these other kind of stuff to other stuff to work out what's going on, to understand it, and some readers say, oh, it's mind-blowing, I couldn't get my head around it, it's a good job there was a previous person who read the book who doodled what the world looks like, and then I could understand it. You know, those kind of things. I thought, like, that idea wasn't, like I say, maybe because I've read lots of science fiction, and I've read, like, Greg Egan novels and stuff where, like, weird geometries and weird stuff going on. Like, for me, that's like the basic, that's the starting point of a novel, not the main thrust of a novel. As I said before, like, you start off with weird stuff, like in Terminal World, and that's just the setting for a wider story. And in the end of the main story is resolved and the main mystery is resolved as well. So what we have is, like, the idea is a kind of a storytelling literary idea, or this is what I can kind of get out of it. And like I say, from the reviews that I read on Goodreads, I'm not quite sure if other people got the same idea, because, you know, people say, oh, I don't want to do spoilers, but because of this, it's an inverted world. And even there's an introduction to the book by, what was the introduction? It was by, I made a note of it. Oh yeah, by Adam Roberts, which I skipped forward when I was first listening to the audiobook. It's like, the title promises inversions, and this book will upend your mind, and things like that. So people have a high regard for the storytelling literary idea. And what I was thinking about this is that, okay, I realize, for me, the literary idea that he's playing with is like inverting, you know, it's an inverted world, but it's an inverted story as well. Like I say, the character is very flat, and the character, it doesn't have very many dimensions. Both of being flat and not having many dimensions it could be seen as an exploration of the wider mystery of the world and things like that. Beyond that, I think that we have a story which isn't a story, and a hero which isn't really a hero. He isn't really a hero because, like they say at the beginning, there's this love interest, and it's like, oh yes, we want to overthrow this dystopia, and we want everyone to do this mystery kind of thing. And then through no work at all, that kind of stuff happens, and it isn't Hellwood, it isn't hero protagonist that's doing that. It's like the love interest, Victoria, whatever her name is, she does that. And then Hellwood kind of retreats into lack of responsibility and conservatism at the end of the book, and you're like, well, he's not the hero, he's doing the opposite of a hero thing. It's like, ah, is that the inverted world? And then there's, oh well, the moving city is the character. It's normally a moving city would be a setting, but in this case, it's actually not the setting. It's the moving city itself, which develops and struggles and has many dimensions and is like a three-dimensional character. And by the end, you know, the city itself goes through transformations. It struggles and gets you through stuff. And then the story ends not when hero protagonist story end, because that isn't resolved, but the city's story is resolved. You know, all of the answers are provided for that, and all of the struggles, and they go through different stuff, and the mind of the city, which is like the council and all the political stuff going on, that is all that changes and stuff, and that develops. So it's one of those things that is the setting, is the main character. What am I trying to say? The main character is the setting of the story. For the setting, I don't know, I really understand. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that the main character, Mr. Hero Protagonist or Hellwood Man, he becomes the setting for the story. Like, his brain and his mind and his journey, kind of his story, is the setting for the setting of the story, and the story's setting. Talking my way around in circles here, but what I'm trying to say is Hellwood Man is the setting for the city's story, rather than the city being the setting for Hellwood Man's story. And from a writing point of view, I'm like, okay, I find that idea interesting when finishing up the story and being totally dissatisfied with the story and thinking about, well, what was the invert? Like, was there more going on for a literary point of view that at the time I thought was just bad writing and just flat characters? And I'm suddenly going, oh, is that what the book was about? For example, talking about Terminal World again, there was at one point where I was like, oh, this story is flagging a bit. This character's not doing much. About a third of the way through, or about a quarter of the way into the story, I was like, well, it's dragging a bit now. What's going on? Why isn't the character doing something? And then the character, like, literally on the page says, wait, I'm not the protagonist of this story. That other character's the protagonist of the story. I'm just a supporting character. Oh, right. And suddenly the story kicks them into gear, and there's action, and there's adventure, and there's airships, and there's gun battles, and all that kind of stuff. Then the story really gets going when the main character realizes that they weren't the main character. But to get to that realization, we had to have like that little bit of a lull in the action and me going, well, this is a bit slow. What's happening? He was really going for it before, and now he's just kind of hanging around, doesn't have anything to do. And yeah, there's that kind of thing. And that's another reason why I think Terminal World might be influenced by The Inverted World by Christopher Priest again, because there's a kind of weird character moment where you realize that the main character isn't the story isn't the story of the main character. The story or the protagonist isn't the main character. The main character is just there while the main story is happening for a bit. And in Terminal World, I think Alistair Reynolds gets away with that, just about gets away with that, and then the story kicks off and goes in different directions. Another story which had this same idea where you go, oh, the main character isn't the main character, is Red Shirts. And all the way through, the main character is kind of nothing, doesn't really do anything, and then at the end it's sort of like, oh, this is all very meta, and it turns out that this character, this person, and I must be representing the author of the story who is just hanging around writing the book. Oh, that must be me. And you're like, oh, all the way through, the reason why this character was nobody and wasn't doing anything and everything was happening to everybody else is because he was the author of the book. And then you go, well, maybe all of Red Shirts was like, it was actually a work of genius that I thought it was shit all the way through, but it was just a parody or a pastiche of shit science fiction, and then it was subverted at the end. I think enough people have convinced me, no, it actually was just a badly written novel and not very good. It wasn't very good, but it's one of those weird things. It's like, can I make an apology for flat characters and bad writing? Can I just explain that away and say, oh, it was all intentional by the author? Sure, I can, and I think it's an interesting experiment, and these things can be interesting experiments, but it can fall flat on its face, like with Red Shirts, or it can work better, like Terminal World. And I think in this case, it doesn't fall flat on its face. I kind of see what's going on, but it doesn't make for an enjoyable story. Like, to have a character be non-heroic and, like, and stupid and flat and not very interesting. Like, there has to be other stuff going on in the story as well. It can't just be like, oh, and this love interest turns out that she's the more interesting character, but we're not spending any time with her. She's having this interesting adventure over here and is being influential and getting wheels turning and doing all this stuff, but we're not going to spend any time with her. Why not? Well, you know, because we're inverting it. Like, oh, and this other love interest that comes up, and you think it's going to be a love interest, but then, oh, that doesn't happen. Oh, and it doesn't do this. Oh, and she provides answers, and the main character is very, you know, kind of just hangs around and wastes time until other people do the right stuff and do the right things and provide the answers at the end of the story. And again, it's an interesting experiment, but it doesn't make it satisfying or rewarding or interesting to read. I want more than that. Like, you can do both of those things, and that's why I think this book, The Inverted World, has been done better. Like, the ideas in this book have been explored, you know, by Alistair Reynolds in Terminal World, and also in other books of moving cities, like he has, which is also mentioned in the introduction by Adam Roberts. He says, "Oh yes, and this moving world has been done kind of in a moving city that goes along tracks and around a world has been done." Has been done since in, Absolution Gap by Alistair Reynolds as well. Much, much better novel, much more interesting, and there's mysteries in that book which are solved, and there's things, oh, what's this person doing? What's doing over here? Why, how are these stories coming together? I find it far more fascinating with much richer characters. And this is, you know, Alistair Reynolds, he's not always known for his, I mean, he's known for good, interesting characters, but not always well-rounded and other things, but there's much more mystery, there's much more story going on there, and the stories aren't overwhelmed by the literary storytelling ideas that the inverted world is, and maybe Red Shirts is. But I'm being kind. Maybe these writers just wrote flat books and uninteresting books because they can't write better. The thing is, I know that's not true in the case of Christopher Priest, because I read The Prestige, and there's so many layers going on there. I know what kind of things he's doing, playing with expectations and playing with characters. I know what he's capable of. And even though The Inverted World was one of his earliest novels, or maybe his first novel, I'm not sure. Obviously, early on in his career, because it's from 1974, and he's still writing now. I think he's just got a lot better over the years. From the 70s when he wrote this up until, I guess, the 90s, late 90s when he wrote the Prestige. I think it says here, about Christopher Priest. When did he write it? Yeah. 2006? Oh, no, that was when the movie came out. So he's been writing since 1968. So this is obviously one of his earliest novels. I talked a bit about the flat writing as well. Now, normally at this point of the podcast, I do an Audible ad spot and say, hey, you can get this book from Audible. And I do suggest you read this book, but I really can't recommend the Audible version of the audiobook that's there on Audible. I remember we talked to, me and Jesse talked to Simon Vance, who was the narrator of The Prestige by Christopher Priest, and that came up, and we talked quite a bit about that. And I was saying, well, what other books by Christopher Priest are you doing? And he said, oh, well, it's a real pity, because I wanted to do these other books, but they got in other narrators. And I thought it was a pity as well, because I like Simon Vance's reading. And he says, oh, yeah, these other narrators, just not as good. And I thought, well, it can't be that bad, you know. It wouldn't be like a professional audiobook narrator to sort of like talk down at other people who don't do as good a job as him. I thought that's not really good. But anyway, Stephen Cree, who narrated this audiobook, really, really not very good at all. And quite surprisingly bad in many, many places. The way he's talking, like as he was reading, he just kind of pauses at different points and puts emphasis on wrong places. Maybe not wrong places, but... You know, I had to get past some of the places where he even felt like he was stumbling. Like, I stumble all the time while doing these podcasts. It's because, you know, I'm not reading from something. I'm just saying stuff that comes off the top of my head. I have some notes. And actually, every time that you hear me stumble, it's normally because I look at my notes and I try and talk and keep reading at the same time. I try and read and keep talking at the same time, maybe put it that way around. So, yeah, he's doing his thing, just not very good. And he's got this Scottish accent, and he's really good at Scottish accents because he's got a Scottish accent. But then he's really bad at any English accent. All of his English accents are really difficult and really not very good. I say difficult. It seems like he's having difficulty saying stuff in an English accent rather than in a Scottish accent. And the way that he differentiates between Hellwood Man and all the other characters is that all the other characters have English accents. Not all of them, but all the female characters have English accents. So, and then he tries to do an English accent, which sounds really bad. And again, I don't mind different accents. I don't even mind bad accents, but when it's like overall the reading is bad, it takes me out of it. And then another problem that he has is that he's got quite a high voice. Quite a thin voice, let me put it that way, not always high, but quite thin. And then at some points he tries to have a voice and talks to someone, and anyone with authority has a lower voice. Unfortunately, Stephen Cree isn't actually good enough to do lower voices, and you think with an audiobook narrator, doing a low voice and a high voice, that would be, you know, a basic skill for an audiobook narrator. But when he says something in low voice, instead of like, okay, I am a low voice and blah, 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 it's sort of like, it's like someone with a high voice trying to do a low voice, but kind of failing, so it's like, oh, I am doing a low voice, and I'm doing a low voice by making my mouth a bit bigger, rather than talking in a low voice. But, I mean, I'm not a very good voice person either. But when I'm listening to an audiobook and going, oh, man, I could have done a better low voice than that just by speaking with a low... But he goes, just by speaking... But it's, and also messing up the accent as well as trying to do a low voice. I can't even explain it, really. So I must admit that this is one of those times that I don't think I would have enjoyed the book a whole lot more if it had been read by a different audiobook, because I think all of my problems with the book are character-based and structurally based and, you know, basic thematic conceptual problems with the book rather than anything to do with the reading. But it is one of those books which I have to just put the reading out of my mind. I have to kind of always just translate what is being read to me. I've got to then translate it into kind of blank text in my head and then reimagine what the characters would sound like again. Whereas someone like Peter Kenny, another Scottish audiobook narrator who does a lot of the Ian M. Banks books as well, he has different voices for everyone, and I never have to do that work. It's like I have to put in far less work to enjoy the different characters, far less work to understand what's going on, because the narrator themselves does so much of that character work for me. And even though, like, sometimes I disagree with Peter Kenny's, you know, voices, or disagree with some of his characterizations, there's never a point where I don't know who's speaking. Even if I think, that character shouldn't sound like that, or that character would never say that like that. And when I read, when I listen to audiobooks of books that I've read before, I already have like how a sentence should be. And then when I realize that the audiobook narrator puts an emphasis on a different word in the sentence, I'm like, oh, that's not where I put the emphasis in that sentence, but I understand what they're going for, but then I can still translate it back. But, you know, so this is one of those few books where I really had to separate it out in my brain. So otherwise, you can go to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, and there you can check out you can get any audiobook for free, a free trial. Sign up for a free trial. I signed up myself for an Audible account. I'm on a Platinum account, which means I get two books a month, and it costs like $20 or something like that for two books a month. Or you can sign up just for the normal Gold account, which is one book per month. But if you go use the code SFBRP, audibletrial.com/SFBRP, you can check out an audiobook for free, and it's yours forever for free. And you can download an app for your iPhone or your Android phone and play it on pretty much any device. And I really do recommend Audible, but I can't recommend this book. I would instead recommend another book. Maybe check out one that's narrated by Peter Kenny or Simon Vance or some of these other really good narrators. Check out Terminal World. There you go. By something Lee. Can't remember his name now. The audiobook narrator for Terminal World by Alistair Reynolds. Read that. That's a really good book. Good narrator too. So that's about it. I'm going to rate this book 3 stars, because there is stuff to like about this book, but there's a lot of frustrations. I think it's a compromised book on almost every level, and even if that compromise was intentional and it isn't trying to invert our expectations of novels and what good writing is, I like to have some of those expectations inverted within a good novel and within a good story, rather than within, like, and now an experiment. If you're going to do an experiment, make it a short story rather than a novel. Even though this is quite a short novel. What does it say here on Goodreads? It was about like 11, 12 hours, 310 pages. So not a big novel. So yeah, 3 stars. Next book I'm going to review, or the book that I'm reading at the moment. I'm reading two. One is the Ware quadrilogy by Rudy Rucker. I'm on the second book. I think I'm just going to stop after the second book and review the first two books. One's called Software, and the next one, Wetware. The other book is a Stephen King book called The Gunslinger, which is the first book in the Dark Tower series. And that's taking a bit to get into, but it's quite a short novel, so I should be finishing these ones up quite soon. So thanks a lot for listening. Email me, luke@juggler.net. Become my friend on goodreads.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge on Twitter. And otherwise, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.